So I'm just going to do the Bible reading now. We're looking at a passage in the book of Daniel, chapter 3. So if you'd like to look on with me as we read through that. So, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, the treasurers, the justices, and the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, prefects, governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, and the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of musical instrument, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the burning fiery furnace. And there are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." King Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then King Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usually heated, and he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. These men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast 3 men into the fire?" They answered the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see 4 men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the 4th is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace and declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered, and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid to ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon.
All right, well, it's a privilege for us as a team to be able to be here with you this week and to be able to share with you. And it's a pleasure for me to be able to be here tonight and to open God's Word with you. If you were here this morning, you'll know that we mentioned we're going through the book of Daniel with the kids in the Holiday Bible Club over the next week. So I thought it would be good for us to look at one of the stories that we'll be sharing with the kids over the next week. So as we've seen, we've read Daniel chapter 3. And if you know your Bible history, you'll know that the book of Daniel was written after the exile. So before the exile, the Jews had lived in the promised land that God had given them. They had the city of God, Jerusalem, as their capital. They had the temple as the focus of their worship. And over them was a Jewish king, and under them as the foundation of their society was the Mosaic Law. But because of their sinfulness and the sinfulness of the people and of the king, God had brought about the exile. The Babylonians, under King Nebuchadnezzar, had conquered Jerusalem. They destroyed the temple. They took the Jewish king captive, along with many of the people, and taken them back to Babylon, including, of course, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So you can say, in a way, that the book of Daniel was written to Jews who were living in a post-Jewish society. No more city, no more temple, no more sacrificing. Instead, they were captives in the city of Babylon, the great city of wickedness. And so the book of Daniel is written to try and answer this question: how is a faithful Jew meant to live in a post-Jewish society? How is a faithful Jew meant to live in a post-Jewish society? Which means, of course, for us in the West, that the book of Daniel is bang up to date, because more and more we need to figure out how we live in a post-Christian society. Let me drive that point home for a second. Al Mohler is the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in America, and he writes a lot about Christianity and culture. And here's something he has to say. "A remarkable culture shift has taken place around us. The most basic contours of culture have been radically altered. The so-called Judeo-Christian consensus of the last millennium has given way to a postmodern, post-Christian cultural crisis, which threatens the very heart of our culture." And he goes on to say this: "The great moral change now taking place on the issue of homosexuality, and particularly on the issue of same-sex marriage, is actually a moral revolution. And in a moral revolution, it isn't enough that what was condemned is now celebrated. It has to proceed to the point that those who refuse to celebrate are now condemned. In other words, those who refuse to celebrate same-sex marriage are to be condemned." So that's just one of the challenges that we face in a post-Christian society in the West. And Daniel chapter 3 has something to say to us about how we face these challenges. So as we think about our passage then, I want to split it up into three sections. So in the first 15 verses, we'll see the pressure on the saints. That's the pressure on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then in the middle of the passage, we'll see the faith of the saints. And then finally, we'll see the saving God with the saints. So our first section then, the pressure on the saints. Now notice here that the issue at stake is a first commandment issue. In Exodus 20, verse 3, God tells his people, "You shall have no other gods before me." And yet here in our story is Nebuchadnezzar with his image, demanding that everyone bow down and worship it. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were under pressure to give in to this idolatry. And as we'll see, this pressure builds up and builds up as we go through the first 15 verses of the chapter. And it begins with the pressure from authority. Nebuchadnezzar is the king of the known world. He's the supreme human authority at that time. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had been faithfully serving him up to this point in the story. But suddenly, the highest authority in the world is commanding Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to commit idolatry, to bow down and worship this golden image. And that's pressure from authority. But alongside this then, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego also faced the pressure from conformity. Look again at verses 2 and 3. Daniel is going out of his way to say that everybody who is anybody came to bow down to worship this image. Verse 2. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And then he repeats the list again, verse 3. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So it seemed that the entire kingdom came to bow down to this image. Everybody who was anybody except Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But as if that wasn't enough, there was also then the pressure from accusation. I look again at verse 8, which says this, "Therefore at that time certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews." So not only is everybody conforming to the king's command, they're also accusing Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're turning on them for their faithfulness to God. And so the pressure's building as we go through these 15 verses. And finally then, the situation comes to a boil when they face the final source of pressure, the pressure from intimidation. They're brought in before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he tells them plainly, anyone who does not bow down to this image will be thrown into a burning, fiery furnace. So we can see that the pressure in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to give in to this idolatry builds up and builds up in the first 15 verses. But this isn't just something from Daniel's day, or something we might hear about from China or North Korea. If it isn't here already, this kind of pressure is coming in our increasingly post-Christian society. And Daniel was written so that we can stand strong in the face of the pressures we face. A few weeks ago, I read about an American baker from Colorado who, because of his Christian beliefs, refused to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. He felt that to do so would be to join in celebrating what God considers sin. Now, the response from the state government was swift. They fined the baker. They demanded that he serve all future homosexual couples and that he go to sensitivity training, where he'd be re-educated in homosexual rights and so that his views would fit in with the new American culture. Now, when I first thought this, I thought, well, that's pretty bad in America, but we're not got quite bad over here just yet. And then, of course, a couple of weeks later, as I'm sure you've all heard, the case of Asher's Bakery came on the news in Belfast. And so here we have in Northern Ireland a Christian facing pressure from authority, from intimidation, and from conformity to this new culture to join society in celebrating what God considers sin. Now, homosexuality may not be the pressure issue that we face. It may be. But if not, the pressure will come from somewhere in our post-Christian society. Maybe from our workplaces when our bosses or colleagues insist that we do something contrary to God's commands. Or maybe from our friends and family when they think the beliefs we have are just outdated and something to be left behind. Or maybe simply from the idols of our culture. Our culture worships human sexuality and worships entertainment and pleasure-seeking, and it calls us to join them in living lives that worship these things. But whatever the pressures are, and you will know the pressures you face much better than I do, Daniel was written to help us confront these pressures and to remain faithful in the face of them. And so if we come back to our passage then, Daniel is telling us about all this pressure in order to get us on the edge of our seats, to make us eager for what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have to say. And finally then, in verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego speak, and we get to see why it is that they've not given in to the pressure to commit idolatry. And so the whole point of this building up and building up is so that when we see what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have to say, we say, yes, I want to be like that. I want to have faith like theirs. So if the first section was the pressure on the saints, this second section then is the faith of the saints. So let's read what they had to say to King Nebuchadnezzar then in verse 16. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. So this is what biblical faith looks like, the kind of biblical faith that Daniel wants us to have. It faces the pressures of a post-Jewish or post-Christian world and says, we will not abandon the worship of our God. Now, there are three important components to this faith that I want us to consider for a few moments now. And when I say faith, I don't just mean an intellectual head knowledge about certain facts. So when we look at these three components, we're not just meant to go tick, tick, tick. I accept that, I accept that, I accept that. When theologians talk about faith, they talk about intellectual head knowledge, that's true. But they also talk about a delight in that knowledge and a trust in that knowledge, such a trust that it changes how you think, how you feel, how you speak, and how you act. So keep that in mind when we look at these three components. We're not just meant to say, yes, I accept that. We're meant to ask, are these three components a part of my faith? Do they impact how I think, how I feel, what I do? So component number one then. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a faith that knew the sovereignty of God. It knew the sovereignty of God. Now, sovereignty simply means that God powerfully controls everything in existence, from the movements of the largest galaxies to the smallest molecules, from the thoughts and plans to the greatest king, King Nebuchadnezzar, to the plans and thoughts of the lowest Jewish slave living under his rule. From tomorrow's weather, or if it rains in a few hours' time, to the upcoming Scottish vote for independence, God rules and controls all things. As Psalm 135 puts it, whatever the Lord pleases, he does, in heaven and on earth, in the seas and all deeps. And here's how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have expressed it in verse 17. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. So you see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego believed God that was able to save them, even from a burning fiery furnace. Even though they stood before the most powerful king in the world, surrounded by his lackeys, they knew that God was in control. And so they trusted not in the strength that man sees, but in the strength that God has. And that should be an essential component of our faith, to trust not in the strength that man sees in the world in a post-Christian culture, but in the all-powerful strength that God has. That's the kind of faith Daniel wanted his original readers to have in a post-Jewish society, and it's the kind of faith we need in a post-Christian society. So component number two then. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego also had a faith that guarded the freedom of God. Notice how verse 18 starts. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. But if not. Basically what they were saying was this. Nebuchadnezzar, we know that our God is able to save us, but we don't know whether he will or not. You see, they did not presume to tell God what to do. How often do we work in exactly the opposite way? We tell God what we want him to do, and then we trust him to do what we've asked him to do. We're always wanting God to do what we please, rather than being content to allow God to do what he pleases. But that isn't how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego approached the situation. They knew God was able to save them, but they didn't presume to tell God what to do. And after all, isn't that what Psalm 135 says? God is in the heavens and he does whatever he pleases. But this makes the third component of their faith all the more amazing. They knew God could save them, but even if God would not save them, they still obeyed his commands. Remember, I said that this was a first commandment issue. Back in Exodus 20, verse 3, God commanded that the people of Israel will have no other gods before him. Here's what they say then in verse 18. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. So that's the third component of their faith. It obeyed the commands of God. Nebuchadnezzar, even if our God won't save us from the burning fiery furnace, we will not serve your gods or worship your image. They were willing to die rather than abandon the worship of God. That's how seriously they took God's law. And this was meant to challenge Jews in a post-Jewish society and us in a post-Christian society. When everyone around us is abandoning God's law, how seriously are we going to take it? When the pressure's on, when there's a burning fiery furnace before us, what do we really think of God's law? How precious to us is our worship of our God? That's the challenge these bakers in Colorado and Belfast face at the moment. Does God's law still stand in a post-Christian society? I'd read there just recently that the baker in Colorado had responded to the legal ruling against him. And basically he said this: I'll be happy to bake cakes and buns and cookies for homosexuals, but I won't bake cakes celebrating homosexual weddings. You can take away my business if you want, but I won't join in celebrating what God considers sin. Now, I don't know anything about this Christian's faith, but his response is very similar to that of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And their response is what Daniel wants us to be challenged by in this passage. Does our faith know the sovereignty of God? Does it guard the freedom of God? And does it obey the commands of God? No matter what happens in the rest of the story, whether Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego die or are saved, Daniel wants our faith to be like their faith, so that we can withstand the pressures of a post-Christian society and prove our faithfulness to God. So how does your faith compare to that of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do you just give a mental assent to God's sovereignty and his freedom and his law? Or does your faith in God and his word truly affect how you think, how you feel, and how you act? That's something for us to ponder this evening when we go home. But for now, we must keep moving on. And so far then, we've seen the pressure on the saints, and we've seen the faith of the saints. And at the end now, we get to see the saving God with the saints in verses 19 to 30. And we see that God delights to be with his people and to save his people. Now, we don't have time to go into this too much, but I'm sure the question is on your mind: who's this fourth person in the burning fiery furnace? In verse 25, Nebuchadnezzar says he sees a fourth man in the furnace who is like a son of the gods. And then later in verse 28, he says that it was an angel. Now, I don't think we're supposed to rely on Nebuchadnezzar the pagan for a correct interpretation of who this is, but we're not given too much other information in the passage. And so commentators are a little divided on this. Some believe that this was indeed an angel sent by God to comfort and to speak with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Others believe that it was the angel of the Lord, Yahweh himself, meeting with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then a third group goes a little further and sees this fourth man as a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. But whatever position you take, the point is clear. God is with his saints in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Listen to these words from Isaiah 43. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. So God delights to be with his saints in the midst of burning fiery furnace experiences. And that's also the point of the poem Footsteps in the Sand. I'm sure you've all heard it or read it at some point in your lives. And the idea is that life is like walking along a beach. And when you get to the end of your life, you look back and you can see two sets of footprints, Jesus's and yours. And if you look closely, you notice that at the hardest parts in your life, there's only one set of footprint. And so you turn to Jesus and ask, what happened, Jesus? Did you abandon me at these points? And of course, the answer is no. Jesus' reply is, I didn't abandon you in those points. Those are the times where I carried you through. And that's the character of our God and Savior. When we go through the burning, fiery furnaces of life, Jesus is always there with us. He won't necessarily save us from our burning, fiery furnace experiences. Financial difficulties, health problems, family problems, persecutions for remaining faithful in a post-Christian society. But he will be there with us, carrying us through. And I'm sure almost all of us can look back in similar experiences in our lives and confess this to be true. Jesus never abandons us. And in fact, this is the secret to a faith that can say, if you kill me, I will not stop worshiping my God. Because my God is a great God. He delights to save his people. And of course, we see this ultimately on the cross. When God's love for us is demonstrated in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Our God is a God worthy to be praised, even in the face of a burning, fiery furnace. Let me close then just by pointing out one more thing from this passage by way of encouragement. Cast your eyes back to verse 15 for a moment, where Nebuchadnezzar asks this question. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? And his point to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is pretty clear. You guys are Jews. How can your God save you from my hands? I've conquered your God's city. I've destroyed your God's temple and enslaved your God's people. Who is your God that he can deliver you from me? But now look down to verse 29. After the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and God's deliverance in the midst of the burning fiery furnace, here's what Nebuchadnezzar has to say now. Verse 29. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses laid in ruins. And why does he say this? For there's no other God who is able to rescue in this way. So you see, Daniel has Nebuchadnezzar answering his own question by the end of the story. And in doing so, Daniel is trying to encourage us. He's saying, look at the result of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's faith. The pagan king who had conquered God's people and demanded that they commit adultery is now blessing God and acknowledging that he has the power to save his people. You see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stood firm in the face of the pressure of a burning fiery furnace. And as a result of their faith, God used the situation to impact the most powerful man in the world. And we're to be encouraged by this because we can see that God can use our faithfulness to the pressures that we face to impact the world around us. Let me share a story with you I heard recently, which was quite moving. It's about a Scottish missionary who went to Africa about 100 years ago, and he went there to set up a mission in a local village, and as part of this mission, he set up a school. And so children would come from the surrounding villages to this school, and one of the children was a boy with a slightly deformed head, and I'd forgotten his name, and I was searching all afternoon to find his name, but I couldn't find his name again, so he's just the boy from the village. And he eagerly came every day to learn, to read, and to write, and to hear the Bible stories that this missionary would tell as part of his curriculum in the school. But it soon became apparent that this boy was having some difficulties. Even though he'd learnt the alphabet, he couldn't spell his name correctly. He could remember the letters he had to use, but he was always getting them jumbled up and getting the letters in the wrong order. And it was the same for all the words that he tried to learn. No matter how hard he tried, he couldn't get the letters in the right order. And eventually the missionary had to say to the boy, or talk to the boy and ask him to go home, because he was taking a place in the school that someone else could use and could continue to benefit from. And so the boy wasn't allowed back in the classroom. But every day he would still travel to the mission, and he would sit outside the classroom under the window, and he would listen to the Bible stories being told inside the classroom. And then he would go back to his village and tell all the younger children in his village the stories that he'd heard that day. And eventually then, word got back to the missionary, and he soon found out that the boy wasn't able to get the stories right that he told to the children. He would mix up the characters from the story, and he would jumble up the events. One event from one story would jump into another story, and he was just causing confusion for all the younger children in the village. And so the missionary had to take the boy aside again and speak to him and ask him not to tell any more stories to the children. However, the missionary did give him one job. He placed the boy in charge of carrying the missionary's Bible ahead of him as he went from village to village to preach. So as the missionary went to each village, this boy would carry the missionary's Bible into the village to prepare the village to hear the message that the missionary would bring. Now one day the boy was down by a river, and near to him were some younger children playing beside the river, when suddenly a crocodile came up out of the river, grabbed one of the girls, and began to drag her back into the river. And immediately this boy jumped on the crocodile and began to wrestle the crocodile and managed to get the girl free. But in the ensuing fight, the crocodile dragged him under the water. And later, the villagers only found one of his legs as evidence of what had happened to him. Now, when the missionary heard this, he traveled to the boy's village to visit his mum. And when he got there, his mum said to the missionary, "My son told me he wasn't afraid to die, because when he died, Jesus would come and take him by the hand." And then she looked up at the missionary and asked him, "Is this true?" And when the missionary nodded, she simply said, "Can you tell me about this Jesus?" And so the missionary led the boy's mother to Christ. This boy who couldn't read, couldn't write, couldn't get simple Bible stories straight, impacted his world for Jesus. His faith, even in the face of danger, impacted though his world for Jesus. His mum came to Christ because of his faith. So if God can use the faith of this little boy to impact his world, can't he use our faith? Just as he did with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were faithful in the face of a burning fiery furnace. And God was able to use their faithfulness and the faithfulness of this African boy to impact their world for him. And so we're to be encouraged by this in the midst of the pressures we face. God can use our faithfulness to impact the world around us. Even when it looks like we're about to go into a burning fiery furnace, God is at work in the situations, using our faithfulness to show his nature, his wonder and his mercy and his grace.